Can I reserve, I think, 3 minutes, please?
You may.
Good morning. My name is Tom Seguin. I represent the plaintiff in this case, Mr. Osteller. I'm here today to ask you to consider two issues, really. The first is to consider the issue that Judge Meyer may have made a mistake in applying the summary judgment standard with respect to the defamation claim, which we brought to the trial court. And secondly, for you to consider whether he similarly made a mistake on the intentional interference of business expectancy claim. With respect to the latter, which I'll get to in a minute, but I will say that I think that the approach I asked the court to consider there is a little bit unconventional, and so I think these two issues can be addressed a little bit differently that way. Mr. Osteller was a person who found himself involved in an altercation, an employment dispute with an employee of the City of Burlington. There's a unique relationship that existed between the county and the City of Burlington, which was encompassed in an interlocal agreement, which we provided to you.
Well, how did the judge erroneously apply the summary judgment standard to the defamation claim?
Well, in this case, there was admittedly, and I guess I've worked on some defamation cases before, but there was admittedly a false statement made to county officials while they were investigating this incident, which gave rise to Mr. Osteller's termination. And it is within that context that I believe that Judge Meyer should have found, at least using a summary judgment standard, that there was an issue of fact as to whether that false statement contributed to the ultimate decision to terminate Mr. Osteller.
Under a defamation cause of action, each of the elements have to be
true,
proved. And so simply making a false statement would not be the end of the analysis.
That's true. And so Your Honor is addressing an issue which the defense has attempted to raise and did successfully before Judge Meyer, that we hadn't established the elements of a defamation claim. Well, we do have, again, admittedly, a false statement. Counsel has cited a case that...
Yeah. You have a false statement. You have to show it's a false statement in the City of Burlington.
Correct.
So what evidence is in the record to raise a disputed issue fact on the speaking agent issue?
It's very simple, Your Honor, and I've cited to the record there in our brief. The interlocal agreement sets forth the people on behalf of the county and of the city who are responsible for managing this interlocal agreement. And that agreement specifically designates Mr. Kavanaugh by name as the person who's responsible for managing that part of their affairs. To get back to your point, Your Honor, we have the false statement, and then counsel has said, well, that it has to be published and it has to be non-privileged. Now, I looked at her brief before coming up here, and she kind of combines those two things. And she suggests to this court that the intracorporate privilege, I guess is what we call it here, applies in this case. Now, I would ask you to carefully look at her brief because she doesn't cite a case that really factually is the same as this. And we do not have an intracorporate setting here because these two entities, by virtue of that agreement, are distinct. They went to great pains to make sure that they were distinct. And if we go even beyond that, I guess, if you were to begin to consider the idea that maybe there was a privilege which applied, then an issue can be made as to whether that privilege was abused. And the particular facts of this case, I think, give us the ability to make that argument before a fact finder. Now, Judge Meyer, in his ruling, didn't really talk to us too much about how he made the ruling. He just issued an order. But our position here is that when Mr. Kavanaugh goes into this meeting with the Skagit County officials and he just sua sponte, so to speak, to apply that term to a citizen, he starts telling them that there's been this very specific contact with a police officer at the time of this incident. We think that there's sufficient evidence in the record based upon the way that statement was made and based upon what was happening at that time and based upon the fact that it was Mr. Kavanaugh, which 2 months before was personally involved in the incident and decided on his own that Mr. Osteller was never going to be allowed onto these premises, that he was attempting at that point in time to put a nail in the coffin. So Judge Meyer apparently didn't think that was important. We do. And again, I'm not here to tell you whether we would win at trial. I'm here to ask you to consider that we had the right to present that to a jury. The last element is that there has to be damages. Now, counsel has talked about, well, you know, Mr. Ostauer didn't present evidence that he had damages. I disagree with that completely. The man lost his job. He was gainfully employed, and this statement was made in the context of a disciplinary investigation at his workplace. He lost his job. He lost everything that went along with that job, the salary and the benefits. The idea that he may have had a business at some point in the past that he continued to have in the future does not mean that he was not damaged. And certainly, in terms of affidavits and declarations, Mr. Ostauer presented a declaration to the court which specifically established that. So I think that we have clearly presented sufficient evidence to get beyond a summary judgment motion with respect to the elements of defamation. I'm running out of time here a little bit. So with respect to the intentional interference with the business expectancy, counsel in her response and before Judge Meyer has talked about, well, this is a employment at will state. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as long as that's what we're talking about, then that's the end of the question. That is not the way I am presenting this matter to you. I am saying to you that notwithstanding that it's an employment at will state, Mr. Ostauer unquestionably was involved in an employment setting where there were personnel rules, where there were express procedures involved which would address the way that he would be treated during a disciplinary process.
So, and you're saying he has enforceable promises that he will be treated in a specific manner under specific circumstances?
Well, the case law in this state talks about that in an employment at will setting and alters the strict employment at will setting.
That's what employers who attorneys draft employee handbooks wrestle with.
It's precisely, Your Honor.
Is it enforced or is it just aspiration?
That's correct. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Sarah Mack and I represent the City of Burlington in this case. For the reasons that I've discussed in my brief, Mr. Ostler's claims for defamation and tortious interference with the business expectancy fail as a matter of law because he has failed to make a prima facie case of either claim. And so the city respectfully asks you to affirm the Superior Court's decision granting summary judgment in the city's favor. With respect to the defamation claim, Mr. Ostler's appeal primarily is based on the one statement from Lauren Cavanaugh to his employer, Mr. Ostler's employer, that he had contact with a police officer at the time of the incident in question. To defeat summary judgment,
was it a little complicated that they had that statement and then they asked him about whether he had contact and then characterized what he said to the investigators as being untrue?
Correct. Mr. Cavanaugh did give an inaccurate statement, and we've conceded that.
Your client, Ms. Kadermas, and the other individual interviewed the plaintiff in this case. They then asked him questions that appeared to be intended to get him to say something that was untrue, relying upon what was said by Mr. Cavanaugh.
Well, I would characterize their questions as trying to understand what happened at the time of the incident. Now, he did not admit that he had contact with any police officer, which is true. He didn't have any contact. But that contact with that police officer, while mentioned in the letter of termination, is certainly not the basis for the termination. It may have been a consideration. It clearly was enough of a consideration that they put it in the termination letter, but the other bases for the termination were listed very clearly, and those had to do with his behavior during the incident in question.
Couldn't that color their perception of everything he said? You know, when you're trying a lawsuit, if you can show witnesses about one thing, they make the argument that they can't believe anything they said.
Well, I think
sort of thing could happen in this context.
I think that you could speculate that it colored their opinion of Mr. Osteller, except for the fact that there were, was already a predetermination letter which said, we believe there are reasons for your termination just based on your behavior, and it had nothing to do with the fact that there was any contact with the police officer because they didn't know that at the time. And those bases remained the bases for termination at the time that he was terminated. Primarily, he had been banned from the property, so there wasn't any place for him to go back to work. Second, he had embarrassed the county. He admittedly swore and used profanities with the city employee at the time of the incident, and they had knowledge of some prior incidents that had occurred where he'd engaged in similar behavior. And so all of those things were the bases of the termination.
Did Mr. Osteller, did he have any other duties with the county other than this particular program?
No, he did not. He was the head cook for this program, and in the city, in Skagit County, the city of Burlington has the only primary kitchen for that particular senior services program.
So if the city decided that he was not permitted on their property anymore, there was simply no employment opportunities for him with the county?
That's correct, in that capacity. That's correct. Whether or not the statements or the misstatement about his contact with police contributed to his actual termination, it's my position that that goes to the question of damages. But your responsibility and what we're asking you today is determine whether or not that one statement constitutes defamation.
Can you address the speaking agent issue for me?
Yes.
And Mr. Kavanaugh?
Yes. Originally, when we raised the speaking agent issue, it was because we had not understood who was necessarily making the defamatory statements. In this particular case, it appears that we're only talking about statements being made by Mr. Kavanaugh as opposed to statements being made by the mayor or any other person who was involved. Mr. Kavanaugh can be a speaking agent in certain situations, and in this particular situation, I'll concede that under an appropriate analysis, he most likely was a speaking agent because he was the only person from the city that they were involving in the primary investigation.
Can you also address the question of whether, as a matter of law, the statement was capable of a defamatory meaning?
I want to understand whether or not it constitutes defamation or whether or not it ruined his reputation. I don't think there's any evidence that there was any reputational problem with the statement. There's no evidence produced by Mr. Osteller that after this incident he hasn't been able to obtain a job because people... Right, damage is a separate element.
So whether it damaged his reputation or not, we go to the damage element. But was this statement itself defamatory?
Well, it was false. So we've conceded that false. And I know in the case law, that element, they say false and defamatory. But I don't understand defamatory to mean something different than false. And so we've conceded that it was false. And the only other aspect of defamatory...
I could tell this courtroom that I'm a monk. Not a true statement, but not necessarily defamatory.
Not necessarily if that's his opinion in particular, because opinions, of course, are not defamation.
And we would need to resolve whether he was talking about his opinion or had some genetic evidence.
I'm stating it as a fact.
Certainly, we would have to determine whether or not it was his opinion. In this case, we're not dealing with an opinion; we're dealing with a factual statement, and the factual statement is false. And we've conceded that it was false.
Factual statement defamatory?
Well, certainly not every false statement constitutes defamation. And the defamatory, I guess I'm having a hard time distinguishing between the falsity and the defamatory question, just because in the context of the elements, that element's usually combined. And so whether or not, I don't know, maybe I'm not answering your question, and I apologize for that, but certainly my position is the statement itself doesn't constitute defamation because of the privilege and the publication elements of defamation. Would you like me to try to address that further?
No, that's okay. And why don't you address publication?
Okay. It's our position that this statement was not published because it's akin to intracorporate communication. I certainly understand that the City of Burlington and the county are separate entities, but it's our position that because of the interlocal agreement and the situation where you have the county as the employer but providing services through the City of Burlington, using City of Burlington property, the City of Burlington is paying the county to provide certain services to the city, that we have an analogous situation where the statements that were being made were being made among corporate personnel as part of the ordinary course of business.
Do you have any cases applying that privilege in this context?
No, I have found no cases, so I'm asking you to apply this by analogy for the first time. And we didn't look at it in that context, so I have not done that research. I can't tell you either way whether it has or has not. Okay. In our particular instance, we were looking at it as akin to a corporate analogy. And there are very limited cases in the defamation context with respect to intercorporate communication. There aren't a lot of intercorporate communication discussions in the context of defamation claim. So I'm happy to submit further briefing on partnership or joint ventures. I haven't looked into that. With respect to privilege, it's well settled in Washington that when an otherwise defamatory statement is shared with a third person who has a common interest in the subject and is reasonably entitled to know the information, then that communication is privileged and does not constitute defamation. And that's the Pate versus Tyee Motor Inn case that I cited in my brief. So for another basis that this statement does not constitute defamation, I would cite to that case, and I see that I'm really running out of time, and I want to address tortious interference. I do believe that the tortious interference claim fails as a matter of law because there was no expectation of a continued employment as an at-will employee. There was no contract in this case, and even if you look to the expectation of certain processes and procedures as laid out in the handbook specifically says that there is no promise or guarantee and that does not constitute a contract. So I'm asking you to affirm the Superior Court's decision in this case and grant summary judgment. Thank you.
Not sure I'm going to use the 3 minutes. On page 237 of the record, there is an excerpt from an employment review that was done of Mr. Osteller. I think it may have been shortly before this incident occurred with him. He was, I don't want to use the word revered in his position by his supervisor, but he certainly had received some very favorable reviews. And if you read that, I think you'll see that his reputation with his employer, his position with his employer was very good prior to this incident, and this incident essentially wrecked his reputation with the employer, particularly in light of the fact, I think as you pointed out, Your Honor, that this anomaly or this unique set of circumstances, that they had a choice of trying to understand him.
But is it this incident that ruined his reputation, or is it this statement by Mr. Kavanaugh?
I think it's the whole thing, honestly, and that's part of what we would want to argue to the trial court if we got to a trial. But at the end of the day, and if we're talking about defamation and talking about the ruining of his reputation, the way that he was perceived by his employer, I think, has to be considered a very real and very important part of his reputation. I don't think anybody here would disagree with that. And it was this statement, and if you look at the chronology of events here, the pre-termination letter, the meeting with Mr. Kavanaugh, and then ultimately the termination letter that was issued, it was sort of like, now we really got you. You are not a good employee as we thought you were before. No. You are this person.
Did they not make the decision? I mean, they essentially told him, we've decided we're going to terminate you, but you get to come in and really explain to us why we shouldn't. And isn't that the way that meeting
they,
took place?
And this goes to the intentional interference with business expectancy. They were trying to follow a procedure. They had made a preliminary decision. I agree with that. That preliminary decision, by the way, did not contain any factual detail which would have allowed him to understand what was happening, kind of a side issue. But if you look at the record and you look at the fact that they had the meeting with Mr. Kavanaugh after that point in time, they were struggling. And if you look at the record right at the end where Mr. Kavanaugh says, what are you guys going to do? Are you going to get me a new cook tomorrow? And they say, well, we're trying to figure things out here. So I believe it is appropriate for us, and I think in a summary judgment setting, for Judge Meyer to say, look, that portrayal of him, not as the good employee, but as the guy over here who's lying to us in a disciplinary proceeding, is the correct one, and therefore we're going to fire him.
All right. So if the city of Burlington had decided that they did not wish to allow Mr. Osteller on their property anymore,
yes,
would that not have justified his termination by the county?
That's a hard question in the case, and one that I struggled with, because I certainly, what's unique about this case is that he's operating on City of Burlington property, but there is this other arrangement which allows him to go into the kitchen. I think that goes to the defamation issue, as I pointed out in the brief, because his case became a political issue, and the city or the county had to decide whether it was going to go to bat for him. And again, that was the genesis of his being forced out of the county. Thank you very much for your time.